Islamic Relief USA is a nonprofit organization that provides relief and development in a dignified manner regardless of gender, race, or religion, and works to empower individuals in their communities and give them a voice in the world.
You done now? Can we start the podcast?
Okay.
Alhamdulillah wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillah wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala.
It's a Water Relief podcast.
My name is Carl, and here with me...
Or Mortimon. One of those two is correct.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back to the Water Relief podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening, sharing, and repeating. Thank you, everyone, for the tweets, the retweets, the hearts, the likes, the shares, the comments, because that's how we know you're listening, and that's how we know that we're engaging, and that's how we know that you, the listeners, are getting our message, which is, you know, really what this is all about. Because if you're not getting our message, it just turns out that Morden and I sit on Skype once a week for an hour and just talk to each other, which, you know, I'm fine with that, but it's far more entertaining when you guys engage with us.
We do that anyways.
We really would. Even if we weren't doing this, we would just sit here for an hour a week and do this, or a couple hours a week. I don't know. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, the hardest working man in the podcast industry.
Hello, it's Mordant, and I am fresh off another weekend of performance, and so that you get the scratchy, very sexy voice that I am putting forth today.
Now, Mordant, if somebody wanted to pull up Google.com and search what your performance is, what would they type in there?
They would type in Tortuga Twins.
And that would be spelled?
T-O-R-T-U-G-A Twins. We do audience participation comedy at Renaissance festivals around the country. So,
and just for the record, you guys are not actually twins.
No. Well, there's three of us. And so, no, we're not twins. Actually, there's six. There's two different teams, but, you know, three. So that's what we're doing. I didn't know we were going to talk about that today. But
well, it was there, so I took it. But, you know, since we're putting the spotlight on you, and since focusing on you a moment,
you're going to tell people why you're doing this. I mean, just keep interrupting you so this doesn't happen.
No, it's going to happen. Just sit back and relax. This is happening now. We have a wonderful guest with us today who is going to educate us because, again, that's why we're here. He's going to share some amazing information with us. But before we introduce him and before we explain the organization he is with, Morden, don't you have an app on your phone that you've been self-teaching yourself Spanish for a little while?
See.
Okay. So with that, just to bring the embarrassment full circle, may I say assalamu alaikum to Jaime Mujahid Fletcher.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you guys doing?
Alhamdulillah. And you are with Islam in Spanish.
Yes, sir. Islam in Spanish. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you guys for joining us. So, Morden, why don't you show us some of what you've learned on that handy... Look at your... this. You know, there are some days I wish this wasn't an audio show, but that's okay.
Estoy muy emocionado a hablar contigo hoy. Y... sí. Sí, sí. Necesito practicar mi español más.
There you go. Man, that's good. That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I got a couple of phrases I can whip out, and then after that, it starts, you know, talking to me like I'm a third grader.
Yeah, I know. You usually run out of fuel after a few sentences, you know? That's good, though. That's the beginning, man. That's great. No, that you have good pronunciation, though. I'll give you that.
Thank you. I actually have a friend of mine who's a linguist, and when I started working with her, she's like, no, you're not going to speak like a gringo. She always corrects me.
That's a good tip. Excellent.
Mujahid, why don't you tell us what is Islam in Spanish?
I would like to say that Islam in Spanish is so close-knit to a lot of my background and my past because I actually found out about Islam approximately a year before September 11th, and I accepted Islam 3 months before September 11th, whenever in the city of Houston, Texas, where I reside, that unfortunate incident happened, this community of 150,000 Muslims didn't have someone to speak in the Spanish language in front of the media. So I was put in the forefront to speak on behalf of Islam and Muslims at that particular, you know, period of time. So
and you,
we realized...
And you had only converted how long ago?
3 months.
So you've been a convert for 3 months, and now, hey, you get to be the spokesperson for everybody.
Exactly, exactly.
No pressure there.
No pressure, right? And, you know, we realized that there was a lack of material in Spanish because my father wanted to know about Spanish and, Islam in the Spanish language. And whenever we went to the general bookstores where Islamic books were, we realized that there were like three of the same topic books. And then that was it. You know, it was like Morton speaking Spanish, but in book form. And that
nice.
Was it.
Nice.
And you have officially won the hearts and minds of all of our audience and ourselves as well with that.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
And, you know, my father was like, if Muslims, you know, resided in Spain approximately 800 years, did they not write books? Did they not speak Spanish? You know, these questions came about. And when I was a new Muslim and I go and speak to the people of knowledge, those that are teaching in the mosque, and they didn't know. They didn't really know. I mean, I think it was a discovery period for them as it was for us. But when we realized there was a huge demographic that had not been served, the Spanish-speaking people, which is about 700 million people in the world, and we were like, wow, we just became Muslim. This is new to us. But imagine the 700 million Spanish speakers, how new it would be to them. And so my father brought a little booklet one day and he said, hey, I found a little booklet, you know, in Spanish, is really concise, really good. We should make it an audio, because by that time I was being asked to speak in churches and universities. And as a new Muslim, I mean, I was out there because of, you know, people needing to know about Islam. And so he was like, you're not going to be able to go everywhere. Might as well make this CD or something. And back in those days, there weren't even MP3s. You know, this is 2001. There was a mini disc players, you know?
Oh, and mini discs. I remember those.
Yeah, little mini disc, man. I sat down with my dad and I was like, all right, here, you read the book, you know, and I'll record it. And we recorded it. And there was an aunt from my wife's side of the family that was suffering from cancer. And she was so upset that we became Muslim. And we gave her that audio CD. I edited. By that time, I had actually gone into the field of media. I went to study multimedia and film to be able to do something with this message, to distribute it or disseminate it amongst the masses. And so I recorded that little booklet. I gave it to my wife's aunt and told her it was a project. And I just asked her to let me know what she thought of it. And after listening to it, we discussed it. And she actually embraced Islam before passing away. And one of the thing she said when she heard the audio, she said, you know, I didn't know about this, and if God gives me life, I'm going to let our family know that, you know, we should pray directly to God and not to anything, you know, between us and God. And that's what kind of like sparked this whole startup of Islam in Spanish. It was to educate Latinos about Islam worldwide. And with that first CD called The Religion of Truth, it became a widely disseminated CD in our locality in Houston. And people used to come up with the CD and say, I want this. This is what I want, you know, in the Spanish language. After distributing that material so much, I mean, people just wanted more and more. And then we've gone on now to distribute over 500. We've gone on to produce over 500 audiobooks and have done over 250 television shows. And we are the leading source of Islamic multimedia in the world. I'm sitting right now on a stage in our production studio. We just built the first Spanish-speaking Islamic center in America. It houses a production studio with the audio sound booth, with a stage. We have a TriCaster switcher system. We have a mosque embedded into this place, a social area and a museum area that highlights the contributions of Muslims in Spain. And it's a 5,000 square foot facility that's never been made in this way. So we've gone on to do so many workshops all across the United States. We've, you know, gone around Latin America, Colombia, Mexico. And so we just kind of have explained a little bit about our story. And Islam in Spanish is the vehicle of how we can tell our narrative as Latinos embracing Islam. And that's in a nutshell. I mean, we participate in many different conventions, the ISNA, ICNA. We've partnered with so many different organizations. And we even though we've been doing this 15 years, there are 700 million Spanish speakers all over the world. So we use media to really reach. We're reaching about 50,000 people weekly via Facebook. And so in a nutshell, it's a group of people now. I started just my father and I. My wife had embraced Islam after I accepted Islam. My father became Muslim. My mother became Muslim. My mother-in-law, my brother-in-law. And it just started spreading in our family. And we just started educating people about Islam. And we don't mean to convert people when we talk. We mean to educate people. But somehow thousands of people have embraced Islam because once they're educated, they're able to make that choice. So we've been very fortunate to see so many hundreds and thousands of people embrace Islam wherever we've traveled and based on whatever we do.
Masha Allah, brother. Masha Allah. Masha Allah.
How are your efforts being received by those who, especially in the Latino community, who do not, you know, who are not converting, but have family members or friends that they know? How are they receiving the information as well?
You know, because our intention is to educate people, we really succeed when we just connect with people and let them know about the Islam from its true authentic sources. And, you know, the fact that Muslims are human beings and, you know, we're very diverse and a lot of stereotypes usually ascribed to Muslims, you know, are so different from, you know, certain facts. And so when we share these facts and then our historical heritage with Al-Andalus or Muslim Spain, they feel that we kind of add value, you know, to them as human beings. I mean, we have so many years of experience and personal research in regards to what we've come to find out that it's almost like we're letting them know that, you know, we didn't know these things, right? So it's, you know, when you give information based on like a personal testimony, you know, it's up for grabs, right? Take it or leave it. But, you know, this is kind of what happened with myself, with my family. And, I mean, we've been interviewed by CNN. I mean, you know, all the major, I mean, NPR, you know, Al Jazeera from the Islamic side of things. I mean, Univision, Telemundo, we speak on television till nowadays and explain, you know, who we are. And it's very well received. Even the media from the Spanish side is very welcoming to inviting us. We just spoke at Rice University, which is an Ivy League school, just this week. We've spoken at Harvard University, Rutgers University, because we're not proselytizing, right? We're not going in to convert. We're going in to educate. And so people really value that you've taken out some time and you've connected with them at a human level and said, hey, this is, you know, the reality of certain things that you may not have, you know, be aware of. And we just wanted to share this with you. So it's really well taken. The Latinos are very happy to see that Muslims are not just Arab. We let them know that it's 15 to 18%, you know, Arab. They're shocked to hear that the largest populated country in the world of Muslims is Indonesia. And the fact that there's over 100 million Muslims in China. That's just almost like world geography and, you know, demographics. And they feel like, wow, you guys know a lot more, you know, than I knew about this topic. And so they usually want to connect after that. And they're just thankful. I mean, even the media, they're just happy that anytime anything happens, unfortunately, and, you know, Islam is, you know, kind of shown in a negative way, they call us right away as soon as an incident happens. Like, can we be there at your studio? Within an hour, they'll be here after an incident happens. And I mean, we've done 45-minute, you know, open discussions on CNN and, you know, in Espanol, in Spanish. And they'll open up the phone lines internationally and people can just call in and ask questions. And they're so happy that whenever we just show up, they're like, we never met a Latino Muslim before. I didn't know these things. I didn't know a Colombian could be a Muslim and, you know, all these things. So it's almost like doing people a favor. We haven't had any sort of like negative, you know, feedback at all. I mean, it's wonderful because, I mean, I've seen that on the English side, unfortunately. But on the Spanish side, we're very healthy right now.
That's a really, I guess that's a really powerful testimony, to use one of the words that you were using. And I keep thinking of the, I think it's a hadith, I might be wrong, but there's no compulsion in religion. And that
it's
is
a verse of the Quran, yes.
Yes, yeah, in the Quran. And that's exactly what you guys are doing. You're not proselytizing. You're not out there going convert, convert, convert. You're just going, no, this information is wrong. Here's the right information. And I'm going to totally derail the conversation here because it reminds me, I was actually just recently reading a study that was done in Canada on Islamophobia and the media. And the research that they were showing was that the spread of Islamophobia and the fear of Muslims in general, they were actually tying it to the media and to the reports that are being pushed out. But what you're telling us is that in the Latino community, is that right?
Sure. Or let's just say it, the media in Spanish, because you know, okay. The Spanish language is the what conduces the narrative to that demographic. Let's just say to niche on that market, right? The
right.
Spanish speaking media. Right.
But what you're telling us is that when something happens, as opposed to other media, they actually call you guys and you get to sit down and carry an actual conversation and go, no, that's not right. Here's the facts.
Exactly. And, wow. And it's because we built that relationship as well as an organization, something that even shocks Muslims and maybe many Muslims may not even know. For example, after San Bernardino, an investigative reporter from Channel 2 contacted the FBI building here in Houston and said, who do you guys know that is a Muslim, understands media, and is doing something productive in society? And the FBI directed them to us.
MashaAllah.
So they came to us, and actually, the person from the FBI said, hey, we won't give your name if you don't want to, but we think that you guys would be great. Because, you know, you guys have set an example of what you guys do as a positive alternative narrative to a lot of the negative narrative that exists online. And that's what it's about, right? Counter messaging. And I mean, because I studied media and film, we intentionally counter message negativity with, you know, positivity of facts and, you know, just the healthiness of how Islam can really impact the society from the general good. Or the common good of the people. And so I told him, yeah, we'd love to. And the individual came and, you know, it was a nice interview and it was interesting. And you can even look it up online from Channel 2, the investigative reporter. He labeled the interview Waging War Against Terrorism Online. And that's the sense of how they coined what we're doing with Islam in Spanish. Because it's countering the narrative of negativity. So if people are concerned about this issue of, you know, people becoming extreme or, you know, getting online and all this, he realized that a lot of our messaging was countering that narrative and also bringing about some good instead of, you know, being part of that negative either coverage or the negative messaging that's actually, you know, destructive. So we're able to understand the messaging and able to, you know, cover this issue from a messaging standpoint. I mean, you know, strategic messaging is one of the backgrounds. I mean, I've studied. So in my field of study, when we sit down, I mean, the media is really a tool. That's the way I look at it, right? It's as neutral as a pen. You know, if you give the pen to an individual that has, you know, an ill intention, he'll write something that's ill, right? You give it to somebody who wants some good, they'll write something good, but you can't blame the pen. And for many years, we've been telling Muslims, you don't blame the media. It's not the media that's after Muslims and not portraying them in a certain way. No, you have to empower your own narrative, define who you are, let people know who you are, let people know, you know, what it is that you believe in and how you contribute to society. And then people will come to know you based on who you say you are, not who others report, you know, about you. And so we're being proactive in building our narrative. Because of that and the dealings that we have with the media, like friends, literally, you guys come, ask whatever questions. We're an open book here, right? Transparent. They really respect that, you know? And when you give people that sense of respect, you know, they somehow, you know, contribute to that, you know, reciprocate, right? And so when we sit down, it's straight talk, you know? And there's no such things as hard questions, you know, because we're not hiding anything. It's just, hey, let's get it out in the open and let's discuss it. Because if we don't speak about it from our perspective, we're going to have a lot of ambiguity and it's going to lead to, you know, ill thoughts and speculations. And nobody likes to speculate and, you know, think that something good comes out of that, you know?
Now, is your message going out at all in English? Because it sounds like it's a great message that might be served to not just the Latino community, but also other communities as well. Do you also have a version or anything like that going out in other languages?
You know, it's interesting. Over the period of years, you know, we've gone more into that area of asking ourselves that question. You know, we need to produce more content in English. Because even though we niched on the Spanish, I mean, the name says it all, right? Islam in Spanish. I mean, there was really nothing that was out there really explaining Islam in the Spanish language. So that's a niche. However, when we look at the demographic of Latinos, especially in America, the majority of Latinos now in America are speaking English. So especially second generation, you know, millennials and so on. And these are the people that are online, right? You know, with social media and so on, which when we started in 2001, it wasn't, I mean, Facebook wasn't even around. I mean, we put up our first videos on Google Video, okay, wow. Before YouTube, you know? So, I mean, we had to wait for us to be able, we used to have Flash, you know, the Flash videos because we couldn't stream regular video. I mean, but I studied multimedia, so I knew in the future it was going to catch up. So we got so niche into the Spanish market that eventually when people started hearing about our work on the English side, they begin to wonder how we did what we did. So we've been talking about our story in regards to what we've done. But I mean, we're not even at the surface level. You know, if we get into the narrative in the English language based on what we've done on the Spanish side of things, that will build, I think, a sense of, it's almost like a case study, right? Like you're, you know, analyzing a case study, and I think so many people could extract benefits and possibly apply it, you know, to their work. I mean, as Muslims and even people who are not Muslim, they just like the fact that, you know, communication and just connecting at a human level is respected, you know, across the board. And there's one way that we look at this situation as to why we've had a unique perspective. There's a scholar of Islam back in the 1300s. His name was Ibn Khaldun. I found out about this man, even though he's a Muslim scholar, I found out about him at the very introduction of a book about sociology. I was looking into sociology, and it said the father of sociology, Ibn Khaldun, from the time of Al-Andalus or ancient Spain, this is the father of sociology. When I look at who this man was, he was a scholar in Islam. I mean, in a time when, you know, I mean, Al-Andalus or ancient Spain, I mean, was, you know, a wealth of, you know, knowledge and discovery and science. But when I looked, there was a book that he wrote called Al-Muqaddimah. This book talks about something called Asabiyya, which is social cohesiveness. He studied the tribes that lived in the desert. He lived out there with them, just observing and writing, just human nature. And he realized that the tribes at that, you know, in the 1300s, their survival mechanism was basically to not let the tribe be attacked. So they were a small few number, they were a minority, but they were very strong in regards to their cohesiveness. You can almost call it like a little gang, right? And anyone trying to come and attack them, you attack one, you attack the whole tribe, right? That mentality, when they went into the major, like bigger sort of societies, they realized they were a minority. So they needed somebody to be their voice. So they appoint one of those guys from their tribe. Hey, go and, you know, deal with the majority and speak on our behalf as the minority. And that happens, right? And they integrate somebody. But by the second and third generation, that guy who used to represent them no longer even sees eye to eye with them because he's not a minority anymore. He's hanging out with the majority. Mm-hmm. And by the fifth generation, they literally have to assign someone else because that guy is so far detached from even representing them. He may say he's from that tribe, but he doesn't really have the pains and ills of that tribe. So when we look at what's happening with us, we're Latinos, we're an ethnic minority in America. We're Muslim, we are a religious minority, right, in America. I'm Colombian. Colombians are 1% of all the Latinos in America. So I am a minority Latino within the Latinos. So you see what I'm saying? You have like a minority within a minority within a minority. And then the last layer of minority is the fact that we're converts to Islam. Mm. And there's about 25% of the people who are Muslim in America, converts. So what you get from Ibn Khaldun's study of minorities, he says, what you get when you're a minority, you have to deal with your resources more wisely, and you have to look at things from a very unique lens, because the majority is kind of, you know, relaxed and they're amassing more, you know, power and wealth, but the minority is just trying to make it and survive. So therefore, he said, instead of looking at a minority as a weak man, he called it a creative man, a person that has a unique viewpoint on society. And I think we've honed in on that. So our perspective is very unique because we have a very unique way of looking at things. And I think anybody can benefit from that.
Yay, I'm part of the 25%. Woo!
There you go. Mashallah. So yeah, we have that unique perspective. I mean, you know, we can't expect someone to tell that story of a person who embraces Islam, right? Like I tell some of the Muslim leaders, it's like, listen, there's no class to teach us when we become Muslim how to navigate the Muslim landscape, right? You have South Asian being a minority or Arab being a majority. I mean, I've made mistakes that I didn't even know were cultural boundaries. You know, I've had people came out of a mosque and I'm like in a hurry, you know, going about my business. And I had this group of, you know, majority Arabs sitting down at a table, and they're like, hey, Mujahid, come have some tea with us. And I said, you know, I can't, you know, I'll see you later. You know, I'll catch up with you. Man, when I ran into that guy, he was so hurt. And he said, why didn't you want to sit with us? And did we do anything to you? I was like, no, man, I was in a hurry, man. It's okay. I didn't know, right? Not sitting down at that table was such a cultural way of just being accepted. You know, they wanted to accept me into their realm, you know, sit down. It's almost like, let's be friends. And I told them, I don't have time for your friendship right now. Right?
Wow.
We don't know that. I mean, what class can you go to where they teach you, hey, if somebody invites you to tea, you better take it. Otherwise, you're telling them, I'm not interested in, you know what I mean, in befriending you.
No, I will tell you, my wife and her family and all her friends, her social circle that she's brought me into, they're all Egyptian. And when an Egyptian offers you tea or food, you say yes. Otherwise, yeah, it is the biggest insult in the universe. And there's that thing that if you're full and they say, do you want more? And you say, no, I'm full. No, you're getting more.
That means you're going to get twice as much.
Exactly.
I lived in Egypt, man. I had to see it for myself. I lived in Egypt, you know.
Where?
Mashallah.
Where in Egypt?
I lived in Cairo.
Cairo, yeah. That's where my wife's family is from.
Okay, mashallah, mashallah. It's beautiful people. You know, I've loved the fact that becoming Muslim, you get to see so many different cultures. Maybe you would not have seen, right? I would not have known so many cultures. You know, I don't know if I wasn't Muslim. You know, because you usually stay around people that are like you naturally. But Islam puts you in a situation where you get to know one another. And that's the beauty of it. So navigating the Muslim realm, man, that's a whole sense of, you know, do I belong? Where do I fit in? What can I do? I mean, I don't even speak these people's language, man. I don't know anything.
We could talk for hours on that. And, you know, and I know I'm going to get like up on my soapbox here and I may get told to edit this part out, but for me, one of my personal struggles is from the U.S. government, because we all know about the court case that happened in California. We all know that they were doing bad things. And when I walk into a place and people see me, I get that automatic, oh, yeah, we know you're one of those guys from the news. So I automatically get that. So it's, yeah, no, the whole blending into the culture, we could spend hours and hours on that.
Imagine. And now we have a whole community that's embracing Islam that we have to, like, coach.
We are sorry to interrupt this program, but we're going to stop this episode right here because it goes on a little bit longer than most of our episodes. So for the second half of this interview, make sure you tune in next week to the What a Relief podcast, Islamic Relief USA's official podcast. So until next week, which will have the second half of this interview, we say, Assalamu alaikum.
Oh.
more stories, less yap.
What?
Yup.
That was just, it was so real.